Hello again and welcome to another episode of BitNote with David Collins. We'll be playing video game music and talking about the games that they're from. Hope you enjoy. So, let's start things off with a video game tune that was actually more famous in the second game it appeared in. Have a listen. That is a classic tune and a lot of fun. It always kind of like sticks in your head a bit. That actually is called the Overworld theme, composed by Koji Kondo, who's done a lot of other music. Which most people may, if they recognize the tune, remember it from Super Mario Bros. 2. The funny thing is it's actually not originally from that game, and here's where the story kind of gets interesting. So we all know that, of course, Super Mario Bros., the classic 1985 video game involving Mario in his first gigantic breakout role, which was possibly one of the best-selling video games of all time. Well, one thing that was as true back then with video games as they are now is that when a game is successful, it needs a sequel. So, of course, the Japanese team got working on Super Mario Bros. 2. Which actually was released in Japan and taken on very well. But there was one slight problem. When Nintendo America got hold of the Super Mario Bros. 2, they were a little not keen on it because, for a start, it was extremely difficult, and secondly, it was also very similar to the first game, just with much more complex levels. It had similar graphics, similar gameplay, and just not really that much was added. Now, they were very uncomfortable with this, so they tried to look for solutions. Now, it was Miyamoto, who of course was one of the classic geniuses of Nintendo game development. Shigeru Miyamoto had of course been involved with the development of Super Mario Bros. 2, but he'd also been involved in the development of another game that had been created by his team around the same time called Doki Doki Panic. The full name of which was Yume Kojo Doki Doki Panic. Doki Doki Panic had an interesting history. It had started, like a lot of games, as a tech demo where they were trying to figure out a programming system where people would be able to scroll vertically and have this whole game where cooperative game where you play with a friend and you can pick each other up and throw each other and throw bricks to get higher and higher and everything. But of course that hadn't worked and the whole game had been scrapped and they basically worked it into another game. The characters from Doki Doki Panic were actually suggested or enforced wholesale by Fuji and the Japanese technology company, who were trying to, you know, work on cross promotion with those characters on other products that they were launching. The characters themselves were inspired by Arabian Nights, so you had the guy with the turban and the princess and a few other kind of weirdly cartoonish, brightly colored characters, and they all made their way through a variety of levels, dealing with all these strange creatures, as apparently they got sucked into a book and everything and had to work their way out of it. So it was a fun game, bright, colourful, and sold very, very well in Japan, but unfortunately they figured that due to the style and themes of it, it probably wouldn't sell very well in America. So, when you look at it, it suddenly made sense. They had one game that had a very popular character in it, but with a game that wouldn't, with gameplay that wouldn't sell well in America, and another game that had very great gameplay that would sell in America, but not characters that would sell in America. So, Nintendo of America did quite an interesting thing. They basically said, we'll take Doki Doki Panic and rebrand it as Super Mario Bros. 2. And that's pretty much what they did. The music you just heard was from Doki Doki Panic and just brought Unchained into the new version of Super Mario Bros. 2. They changed the main characters, originally had four characters, now they changed it to have Mario, Luigi, Princess Peach, and Toad, who, by the way, that's Toadstool, so he's kind of a mushroom guy, he's not like a frog or anything. And they changed things here and there, reskinned the images of various different things to make it look a little more like a Mario game, and pretty much gave the rest off as it was. I mean, it became a very popular game because it had fun gameplay mechanics and it was a fun character. But it was kind of interesting for anyone who is a fan of Mario and suddenly picked up and played this game. I mean, it was like, you know, normally I remember how it was, you know, Mario 2, great, and you pick a character, great, four characters. So then you fall down from the sky in the first level, and then you go through a door, and you're going, wait a sec, doors are a little unusual, but you don't worry. So the music starts up, and you see an enemy, and you jump on the enemy, and then you land on the enemy, and then the enemy keeps walking, and you're riding on top of the enemy, and you're going, wait a second, because in any previous Mario game, jumping on the enemy completely damaged it, squashed it, stomped it, and suddenly now the enemy is walking along below you while you're calmly standing on top of it, and you try to figure out what to do, and eventually you figure out, you press a button, and suddenly your character picks up the enemy from underneath it, and it's around that time that you see the other enemies heading towards you, and just as you're trying to figure out that you can actually throw the enemy that you're holding at the enemies, one of the enemies attacks you and you probably die, and you figure, okay, I'll get it this time. But that's kind of one of the fun things about it. It was a bit of a departure from the whole Mario formula, far more than, of course, the original Japanese game was. But it was an interesting twist. Because it's based on a new game, it brought a lot of new interesting things to the Mario franchise, like a whole huge variety of completely new characters, new mechanics, new worlds, areas. It was just fun to get around, and of course, new ways of dealing with the bosses. Like, there's this one boss enemy that shoots, you know, called Birdo, who shoots these great big eggs at you, so you have to jump up and land on top of the egg, then pull it up, then maneuver back to the creature as they're shooting more eggs at you, and then get close enough and just throw the egg at and defeat the creature, and hooray, that's how it works. So, it's just, it had a lot of fun mechanics, and you're climbing vines, just trying to pick it up, and even these little vials you could pick that would just, when you threw them, would open up doors that would let you see a brief mirror world of the current area you're in, so that you could search for extra lives and stuff. Another thing I really liked about it is because it was just mapped over to a Mario game, they actually managed to open up more characters. I mean, it wasn't just Mario and Luigi, but you had also had Toad, who was nice, and also Princess Peach, who rarely, rarely ever gets to play along in the has a playable character in the Mario games. She was actually one of the more popular characters for this game, interestingly enough, because one of her abilities was you could jump, and then as long as you held the jump button, she would hover just in the air for a second and drop the second you release it, or right after the second is up. And this made her great for, like, maneuvering her precisely into place and then landing on objects, whether they be enemy shells or enemies or all sorts of things. And because part of the key core gameplay of the game ended up landing on things, it was pretty cool. A lot of the other characters also had various different abilities. For some reason, no one ever really liked Toad, but Luigi was pretty cool because he could have these great big high jumps and suddenly start running in midair, he'd fly through the air. Going back to Peach, though, she does tend to get shafted in the video games because most of the time it's the Mario Brothers who are rescuing her. And even in a recent remake of the Super Mario Brothers, they had you play as Mario, Luigi, Toad, and the fourth character was another Toad. So then she ended up starring in her own video game where her major superpower was to change emotions. I don't get it either. I never really played the game, but it's just, if people had fun playing as her in Super Mario Bros. 2, then why not play her as her a bit more in a few different games, as opposed to her being the one you have to rescue the whole time. But anyway, it was a fun game, as I said, and there were a lot of crazy, nice and themed and fun levels, like Egyptian levels and Great Big Thing levels, and the whole game would involve you just picking up items and throwing them, either the enemies themselves or turnips that would appear on the ground. And while I generally don't pay much attention to video game marketing, when the game was remade for the Game Boy Advance, I just loved how one of the advertisements for the games involved a bunch of guys at a shooting range, just shooting the targets in the distance, and as we went down the line of shooters would finally come to the last guy, who was taking turnips out of a great big box and hurling them, along with a huge amount of leeks, right at the humanoid target at the end of the range, and doing a damn good job of it. So, it's nice for marketing to make a bit of fun of their own games, but also show it's in good humour. Alright, on to our next song. Now, when I was planning this episode, and yes, there is a bit of planning that goes into this show, a little, I realised that I needed just one extra song just to bridge the gap in the middle of the show. And this isn't technically a video game music piece, but I'm going to...
Hey, Tom, it's Bob from the office down the hall. It's good to see you, buddy. How have you been? Things have been okay for me, except that I'm a zombie now. I really wish you'd let us in. I think I speak for all of us when I say I understand why you folks might hesitate to submit to our demand. But here's an FYI, you're all gonna die screaming. All we wanna do is eat your brains. We're not unreasonable, I mean no one's gonna eat your eyes. Maybe we should compromise. If you open up the door, we'll all come inside and eat your brain. I don't want to nitpick, Tom, but is this really your plan? Spend your whole life locked inside a mall. Maybe that's okay for now, but someday you'll be out of food and guns, and you'll have to make the call. I'm not surprised to see you haven't thought it through enough. You never had the head for all that bigger picture stuff. But Tom, that's what I do, and I plan on eating you slowly. I mean, no one's gonna eat your eyes. All we wanna do is eat your brains. We're at an impasse here. Maybe we should compromise. If you open up the door, we'll all come inside and eat your brains. I'd like to help you, Tom, in any way. Well, technically I am, I guess I ground somehow. Meanwhile, I'll report back to my colleagues who were chewing on the doors. I guess we'll table this for now. I'm glad to see you take constructive criticism well. Thank you for your time. I know we're all busy as hell, and we'll put this thing to bed when I bash your head open.
All we wanna do is eat your brains.
We're not unreasonable, I mean no one's gonna eat your eyes.
All we wanna do is eat your brains.
compromise. Open up the doors, we'll all come inside and eat your brains.
And that was Re Your Brains by Jonathan Coulton. Now, I know it's not technically video game music, but Jonathan Coulton has actually made video game music in the form of Still Alive, which of course was the hit song from the Valve video game Portal. And possibly because of that relationship Jonathan has with Valve, this song I just played, Re Your Brains, actually appears in another video game that Valve made called Left 4 Dead 2. So great, he made a song about zombies and Valve decided, hey, let's put this song in a game about zombies. And everyone was happy. So what happens essentially in this game is that you're going along with your buddies trying to blast off zombies, and then suddenly in some abandoned tavern or something somewhere, you'll see a jukebox. So you start it up and a random selection of songs can play, but sometimes it's that song. So you'll listen to Jonathan Coulton's great song just as you and your friends are viciously trying to mow down zombies that are all around you. Good times. So, with that fun little song covered, let's move on to something a little more tense and suspense and spine-chilling. This is something you can listen to in
Thank you.
And that, my friends, was Garage Battle by Nathan Grigg from the video game Fear by Monolith Production. And yes, if you noticed, I started its introduction with a pun. I said, this is something you listen to in Fear. Aha. Get it? Okay. Fear actually is an acronym, and honestly, it's a habit which so many video games have. They figure it sounds cooler if we come up with some word and then put it all in capitals and then come up with an acronym that fits those things, which according to Wikipedia is called a backronym because it's an acronym made after the final abbreviation has been come up with. But essentially, FEAR stands for First Encounter Assault and Recon, and that doesn't sound very interesting, and so there was actually a competition online for people to come up with better acronyms for the word FEAR. Anyway, FEAR is a fun game. It basically consists of shooting military men in gloomy corridors. And sometimes something really, really spooky happens, and weird stuff happens, or a bit of plot development, or a character talks to you. And then it's back to shooting military men in gloomy corridors. It doesn't exactly say a lot about the diverse environments that the game that you'll be playing around. In fact, there's actually a demonstration version which I played, which basically chops a bunch of sections from the main game and puts them together to give you a flavour of the whole game. This is a very clever idea, but I suddenly realised when I was playing the main game that I never actually noticed the demo had been made out of so many disparate parts. Now, this could either say about how seamlessly the demo was constructed, or a bit more about how very much alike so many different sections of the game are. But that's really going off the point, because what FEAR really delivers is a lot of high adrenaline, shooting military people with guns and being tactical about it. One of the strongest elements of the game, especially when it was released, was about how, well, smart the enemy was. Now, obviously, they're not incredibly smart. They're not exactly going to go around solving algebraic equations and then quoting Einstein and discussing the philosophy Nietzsche or whatever, but it's clever because you need to actually think to go around them. They're not going to just suddenly come across you in one line after another, and sometimes they'll actually hold back to make you move forward towards them. So you've got to think strategic, and you can't really underestimate them. And if you hold back too long, they might throw a grenade your way, which is kind of annoying. The AI in so many video games is robotic. You can almost see the exact step-by-step script that they're following in order to advance towards you, and it ends up just making them like a bunch of rubber duckies that just pop up that you have to shoot down. So the fact that in FEAR you realise that the enemies might try to go around you or shoot you from behind, or that if you've left the room that they and re-enter it again that they might be in a different position, all of these have to make you think and just be strategic and use the right actions and grenades and whatever weapons you've got it. And you've got some nice weapons. They have the standard, you know, gun, pistols, machine gun, shotgun. But they've also got a couple of other weapons as well, which are pretty fun. Such as one that will shoot bolts that can end up nailing the enemies to the wall. And another one that can vaporize them to the point they only leave a skeleton. As I said, the game is kind of spooky at times. And that's because it takes inspiration from a Japanese horror films. So it can be somewhat unnerving when you see your highly outfitted squad mates move on ahead of you and suddenly find they're completely pulverized by some mysterious, malevolent natural force that you don't fully understand. And every so often this creepy little girl pops up and you suddenly get the chills, because of course, if there's one thing you know from horror movies, it's that young, creepy little girls are incredibly, incredibly scary. There's also this guy who's more the enemy, who'll suddenly appear for moments then suddenly disappear in a puff of smoke, but he kind of pulls that a bit too often, so it kind of loses its effect after a while. So it's kind of like you suddenly see him and he makes a mysterious message and you're going, yeah, you're just going to like disappear in a puff of smoke now, aren't you? And he just walks away. But the game is a bit fun as it alternates between some of these horror segments and the more realistic shooter. And like I said, while I find the whole horror aspect is suddenly you see ghosts appear, or suddenly you get flashback and find yourself in a different location, or all these sort of creatures suddenly moving out of you out of the thin air, and then it's kind of fun. But I still think that the main part of the game is just when you shoot those military men in those gloomy corridors, and then when the military men get more serious and get robots and you have to beat them too. Part of the reason the enemy AI is so compelling is because of how the developers designed it. A lot of other AI, it's like you're in a state. You're either shooting or aiming or walking along doing nothing, and then suddenly something happens that changes you out of the state of walking to attacking, for instance, a can rolling, like hearing a noise or seeing the enemy, the player. But what the guys at Monolith Productions was, they changed the AI system so that instead of just being in a set of states, that the AI enemies basically have goals. And if they can complete a goal, then they do whatever, then they decide what is the shortest route to complete that goal and pursue that route. And if they don't have the means to complete that goal at a given instance, such as, for instance, their objective is to shoot the player and they don't see the player anywhere, then they'll just fall back on a lower priority goal. It's kind of interesting reading about this because it's almost like life when you think about it. Some of us just define ourselves by who we are and then a bunch of things change us. And other people define themselves by what goals they try to achieve. And they always just make their actions on the basis of how to achieve those goals. And if they can't, then they fall back on another goal. So I suppose in AI at least, going for the goal-oriented approach just makes you smarter. So, the video game Fear has a nice little story to it, which is kind of minimalist, but sort of gets you along, and like I said, is largely an excuse to go into offices and shoot military people in gloomy corridors, or go into warehouses and shoot military people in gloomy corridors. I know I keep going on about this, but it's actually a fairly good thing. I mean, in a lot of classic video games, it wasn't so much about whether the locations were realistic. They were designed to make the most amount of gameplay. They were designed... If a corridor is done, it's designed for being strategic, for rooting around, for finding alternative ways for to shoot your enemies, for taking cover. The levels are designed with the gameplay in mind before about how realistic it is to have a gigantic set of warehouses with a large amount of winding, gloomy corridors. I mean, speaking seriously, I don't think there's a single video game out there that has ever depicted a sewer to be in any way realistically. I mean, the very fact that you can normally walk full height up and walk around them is just... for starters. But the story of the first game is pretty simplistic, but okay to follow along with. And then there are two expansion packs, which are like mini sequels, that continued the story along. And then there was a sequel that completely ignored what had happened in the expansion packs, because the expansion packs have been made by a different company, Timegate Studios, as opposed to Monolith Productions. But I like the expansion packs, and what I'm about to play you now is one of my favourite pieces of music from the expansion packs, which is also composed by Nathan Grigg. It happens at a part where it almost seems like your character's been through hell, and just as you get to the heart of the supernatural occurrences, something beautiful happens, and suddenly, things calm down. Well, this has been David Collins with BitNote. You can download our episodes online and follow us on Twitter. Thank you for listening.